On today's episode of Let's Locums,
there definitely is a shift in providers' mentalities of like, I'm not going to be a slave to the system. I'm not going to be a cog in the wheel, right? Like, I have a life outside of medicine. I love medicine so much and I love taking care of my patients, but like, I have other passions. I want to start businesses. I have side hustles, right? I want to invest in real estate. I want to get to know about that. I want to spend time with my family and be at home with my kids, you know, that kind of thing. And so I think locums really, it's truly the best kept secret in medicine because it really does allow you to do all those things.
Welcome to Let's Locums, the podcast hosted by Drs. Mark and Allison Royer, ENT surgeons and the founders of SpecialtyLocums.com. Join us as we explore the world of locum tenens and help you navigate the options for a flexible and rewarding medical career.
Hi, welcome to Let's Locums. My name is Mark Royer. I'm a ear, nose, and throat surgeon and locum tenens physician. Today, we have a very special guest, Nijma Yusuf, DNP and CRNA. Nijma is a full-time locums nurse anesthesiologist with 5 years of experience as a CRNA. 4.5 years of those are as a locums provider. After earning her doctorate of nursing practice from Rush University in 2020 and gaining ICU nursing experience at their medical ICU, Nijma found herself seeking greater challenges and a caseload that matched her ambitions. That search led her to the world of locums, and she's never looked back. In December of 2021, Nijma founded Direct to Locums, a mentorship and consultation platform that helps healthcare professionals navigate the transition into locums, offering services ranging from contract negotiation to 1099 financial management. Her goal is to demystify this often overlooked area of medicine and help practitioners thrive. You can find her sharing valuable tips and insights on Instagram at Direct to Locums, which Allie and I follow and greatly enjoy. Today, Nijma will share her locums journey, the creation of Direct to Locums, and practical advice for CRNAs and other healthcare providers considering the switch. Nijma, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Dr. Royer. I'm happy to be here.
So I'd love to first start about kind of hearing your background and specifically the moment that you decided to leave your role at an academic center and take the leap into locums.
I graduated nurse anesthesiology school in 2020, just during the height of COVID. And I started at a large academic center working across 5 different hospitals. And a couple months in, I realized that there were a lot of residents, a lot of trainees, and I oftentimes played the role as preceptor, mentor, and I wasn't actually doing a lot of the anesthesia myself. And as somebody that is new into the field and entering as a new graduate, I wanted to practice more of what I spent so much time going to school for. So I started looking around, not necessarily for locums. I actually didn't, to be honest with you, even know what locums was. I hadn't worked with any locums providers prior to that. And just kind of talking to my colleagues and some of my friends, reached out to a mentor who just happened to be starting his own locums agency. And he said to me, why don't you leave where you're at and just take the plunge and come do locums with us. I did a lot of research and I trusted this mentor. I knew him, you know, throughout my training program. In the 11th hour, I said, I'm just going to bite the bullet and I'm going to do this. I really care about my practice and getting more challenging cases and working with surgeons that were doing groundbreaking procedures. And so that's how I got into locums. And I've never looked back.
Well, that's fabulous. So you started as your nursing career began as an ICU nurse at Rush. And I'm curious to know what key lessons you learned in that role.
I was an ICU nurse for 5 years in the medical ICU at Rush. And Rush has one of the top CRNA programs in the nation. And so I was getting to see the work that anesthesiologists and CRNAs did on a regular basis. And so 5 years in an ICU, I think, is kind of the point where, you know, people kind of start looking around like, okay, what's next in my career? That's kind of a solid experience. And so just increasing scope of practice and, you know, getting to do, you know, procedures and take care of patients in a different way, I think was very attractive to me.
What were some of the most unexpected challenges you faced during your first year as a locums nurse anesthesiologist, and how did you overcome them?
I was lucky enough to have mentors around me that had done locums, that were in the locum space for a while, that really held my hand and just took down the barriers for me. I think that is part of the reason why I started Direct to Locums, because I know what I know about locums now, that if I didn't have a mentor, there would be some very costly mistakes. I think I was fortunate enough to avoid a lot of the pitfalls.
Well, that's great. It sounds like you had some really solid mentors when you started. Was there a particular moment or case that you kind of just took a step back and were like, oh, I've made the right decision to pursue locums as opposed to a more traditional path or career?
I love anesthesia so much. I work like 60, 70 hours. I'm a workaholic.
Wow.
You know, the cases are always interesting, right? You know, you come into difficult airways or patients with, you know, complex comorbidities. But I think for me, the thing I really love about locums, and I'm just a social butterfly and an extrovert, and I love meeting people and growing my network.
You love anesthesiology, and that's clear from your Instagram especially. What drives that passion for you?
I think my background as a nurse, it's a special field because not a lot of advanced practice nurses just get to do what we do in the scope that we do it in. Just really taking care of a patient throughout the perioperative process, it's something that I think the autonomy and the accountability that comes with that is just something that I think as a nurse you don't really experience in the ICU.
Allie and I work frequently in more rural settings. And that was our kind of exposure to nurse anesthesiologists. Now, wherever we practice, nurse anesthesiologists are providing anesthesia, and whether that's our level one trauma centers or our community-based hospitals. I think surgeons are becoming better understanding of the role and the services they provide. But what is one misconception that you'd like to clear up for them?
So I think the biggest misconception across the board, not just from surgeons, is our scope of practice. So, and locum surgeons know about how nurse anesthesiologists function because they go everywhere and they see different practice environments, right? So oftentimes, if you're stuck working at a hospital with surgeons that have been there for 30 years, they only know one way of doing things, right? I'm involved in a lot of like staffing for new groups, right? Because they have emergency needs, you know, they have needs for 10, 20 providers at any given time. And so it's the best kind of contract to get, because then you go in and you're experiencing on a daily basis that aha moment in with surgeons, like, wow, you really can do it all, you know?
What about just the general public or a patient that comes in? What's one thing you wish that they understood about your profession that maybe most don't?
So patients similarly, I think, are unfamiliar just in general with what we do on a daily basis as CRNAs and as anesthesia providers. And so the way I introduce myself to a patient is, my name is Najma, I'm going to do your anesthesia today. And, you know, I'm a nurse anesthetist. And oftentimes you get so are you an anesthesiologist? Are you an anesthetist? Like, what? So are you going to be in the room the whole time? Like, is there also a doctor? Wait, are you a doctor? Are you a nurse? Like, you know, and that's where, you know, I just say I'm part of a team. There's also an anesthesiologist here. You know, we work together, you know, if that's the environment that I'm working in, or, you know, if not, then, you know, I kind of clarify that. But it gets a little tedious to constantly have those conversations where, you know, because there's trust in that conversation, right? Like, you have 30 seconds to earn that patient's trust of, I'm going to do a good job and I'm going to take care of you. And anesthesia is like, that's what they're worried about, right? Like, they don't want to feel any pain. They don't want to wake up during the procedure. So, you know, kind of educating the patient population on the anesthesia profession, I think, is something that as a profession we're working on doing.
When Allie and I are in our rural sites, there is no MD anesthesia. It's nurse anesthesia. How often are you on your own versus that you would have an MD there as well? Is it a state by state issue where you can have complete independent practice?
So that's a good question. I've been a CRNA for 5 years and I'm kind of moving into advocacy, so I can answer that question. So I actually work more in rural practices as well. And actually CRNAs are 80% of the providers in rural environments, as you know. So the specific practice that I work in, we have a supervision model, but we do everything we need to do for that patient, whether it's a block or an epidural or a spinal or whatever the case calls for. So we see the patient throughout the entire process. In Illinois, we currently do not have full practice authority. So without getting too much into the weeds, a few years ago, the nurse practitioners kind of went on that journey to get full practice authority for themselves. And they were able to have that bill pass with the caveat that they leave CRNAs out. And so we actually just this January introduced a bill for a seeking full practice authority that I am currently involved in. So it's really a state-by-state, legislative, prerogative. And the way that things are written now is that there needs to be physician oversight, and that physician doesn't necessarily need to be an anesthesiologist, but needs to be present in the building, which, as you know, it creates so many unnecessary restrictions. There's a lot of barriers in that sense, legislative wise, but we're working on that.
The other thing I wanted to address and ask, because I've heard from surgeon colleagues, is, how liable am I? Like, am I at so much more risk if anything goes wrong with the anesthesia? And I've talked to the CRNAs that I work with about, as I've heard these objections. Would you address that? I think it's an overblown fear, but is one that I have heard expressed repeatedly.
So the surgeon is in no way liable for the actions that I take as a nurse anesthesiologist, unless they give me a specific direct order, right? And so if you say, do not start CPR, and I choose to use my judgment and listen to you, and something happens to that patient, then you're on the hook, right? And otherwise, you know, you're not in the practice of anesthesia, right? So, that's I think a false misconception, and it's purposeful, if I might add, just to kind of scare surgeons from working with advancing independence for CRNAs.
Well, I appreciate the advocacy that you're doing, because I have seen firsthand the value of being able to do these cases in these small communities. Oftentimes, where you're thinking of like kids needing ear tubes or their tonsils out, these procedures that are routine, but also life-changing and can have profound effects. And if they have to wait, if their parents can even get off work to drive them 2 hours to the second nearest facility that could do that, there's going to be significant delays in their speech and ultimately their long-term outcomes. And so I think anything to safely provide these cases where the patients are at is just so important. And so I think that's an unfounded fear, and I appreciate you kind of clearing that up. Well, good luck with the advocacy. I hope that goes well. And I remember when I was even in undergrad, which is way back, and certainly medical school, how difficult it was to get into CRNA programs. I had like someone in some of my basic science classes, and that was their goal. And they're like, it is like, at that time, almost impossible.
It's really difficult. Each program has like maybe 27 to 30 seats. So, and you're competing with, everybody has a 4.0 GPA. Everybody, speaks two languages, right? People have gone on mission trips and, they're humanitarians and they're all over social media. They have so much to offer. And you're like, I have 30 slots, right? So like I have, I'm really close with some program directors that just talk to me like, all the time of, I wish I can give everybody a chance,
right.
But it's very competitive.
But because it's competitive, because they have these limited slots, because they're accredited, it's great for the profession. It's rough if you're not accepted in, but if you can make it there, and then that really comes with a sense of, hey, this is, if you have those letters behind your name, then you're going to be providing excellent
care
for patients.
Crop, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd like to transition now into the creation of Direct to Locums. So what inspired you to create Direct to Locums? What gap did you see in the locums market that needed to be filled?
In one of the rural sites that I work in, I had the VP of the anesthesia group approach me and say, listen, you've brought a lot of your friends. You're all really good providers. I think, you have a knack for kind of help staffing. You love anesthesia. You're here all the time. Why don't you consider, becoming one of our agency partners? And so really how it started was, I was already kind of like, I had these thoughts in my head about, I'm spending hours on the phone with my friends telling them how to transition to locums and not getting paid for it. Not that I wanted to get paid by my friends, but it's a lot of time. We're busy. We work a lot of hours. And so how can I capitalize on this like passion that I have and also help people? And so it started off as being I'm going to help you transition to the 1099 world, which I think, even when people come into locums and they want to do the job, they're hesitant because, the hospital, matches my 401k, right? Like you always hear that kind of stuff where it's like, you could do that on your own.
Yeah. These benefits that aren't really necessarily that great of benefits, and certainly not in isolation of being employed.
Yeah. So it started off that way. And this particular anesthesia group only employs 1099, like with their perm staff. And so it was kind of a partnership like, okay, we have CRNAs that don't work with us because they don't want to be 1099. So we'll send them to you and it kind of grew from there. But I will always say that we are first and foremost a mentorship platform. So actually the way that I work with my clients is they come to me and they say, this is what I'm looking for. This is the kind of practice environment that I want to work in, even if I don't have contracts in those states. I know enough people to kind of direct them in the right way. So
you mentioned that Direct Locums isn't a staffing agency per se. It's a mentorship, a consultation platform. Why is that distinction important to you?
So it's important because I think, there's just so many locums agencies out there right now. And recruiters in general have like this like negative, it comes with this negative connotation of like, oh, you're just trying to make money from me, right? And I think, the fact that I do locums as a provider and also my passion for advocacy like together, I think gives me a little bit more credibility. Like, I'm not just trying to make money from you. And actually, I don't charge for my consults. And actually, I don't actually care if you take my contracts. I hope you do.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's kind of the point of it. But if you don't, at least I know that I put you in a position that it's going to help grow our profession. And I'm going to make sure that you're in a position where you have supportive CRNAs that are going to teach you how to do all these advanced skills. And then you're going to become an advocate. And that's how we grow, right? By strengthening each other. And that's truly the platform that I'm trying to build.
Well, that's great. And that sounds so similar to what Ali and I have done and try to do, because I think the big value of having providers in our roles with our colleagues who are looking to doing locums versus a recruiter is the fact that you actually know what is good about a job, right? You know the things
yes.
to ask about, like what support do you have? What type of cases will you be doing? And that's often, I think, very difficult for even the best recruiters to have an understanding of. They've never cared for a patient. If they've never been in that setting, they don't even know what they don't know. So to be able to have someone who's actively practicing, who's actively in those roles, to be able to guide and mentor is super important. So in your role, as you're talking to a different nurse anesthesiologist, what are the most common questions or concerns that you hear from them when they're considering the switch to locums?
Oh man, it's funny because it's always like the same three or four things, right? And I'm always like, I talk about this on my page, like follow me, right? But like, it's even with all the reels and I try to address kind of the same issues, people are still, having fears about certain topics. So one thing that comes up is, kind of how are you treated at a locum site, right? Like and I think in our specific role, where that comes from is like the nursing agency, like the travel nurses, right? Like back in the day, like 10 years ago, you had this, super unprofessional, right? Traveler that came from, a super rural area that wasn't really a great nurse. And then she's on your unit, you kind of have to deal with it. And, we all have these like negative connotations that we associate with like travelers. But I definitely think, as a locums, providers and surgeons, and you bring a different like credibility to the space, right? Like, that's one thing. But also, and specifically in the field of anesthesia, hospitals are so short, and they can't run an OR without an anesthesia provider, right? And so, to the contrary, I've actually been in situations where I'm uncomfortable at how I'm being treated versus how the permanent staff is being treated, right? So I'm getting better assignments. I'm being let out early, right? Make sure you give the locums a break, right? And it's like,
want them to come back.
You want them to come back, right? And I'm like, I'm a locums. Like, it comes with a job. If I don't get a break, I don't expect a break. I hope I get one. But, you kind of come in like, I'm here to work, right? Like, I'm not here to complain or, kind of have that attitude. And so I think that's one of the common misconceptions is like, I'm going to be given GI all the time, right? Like, I'm not going to do these like fancy ENT cases, right? They leave those cases for the permanent staff. The rooms that we like to be in, right? Like plastics is a very nice day, or like gynae, right? You're dealing with like mostly overall healthy patients, right? I would say that's something that I address often. Another thing is, practicing as a new grad. People have a lot of fears, like, in terms of like what kind of cases you're going to be put in, right? Like, and so for that, I always say that generally speaking, it's all about communication. So when you go to a site, you meet the chief MD, you meet the board runner, you meet the people kind of in charge, and you present yourself, right? Like, this is who I am. This is what I'm comfortable with. This is my experience. Like, for me specifically, I don't do thoracic anesthesia. Like, I don't do any CV cases. Like, it's not in my wheelhouse. I don't like to do it. There's people that love to do it, and I'll leave it for them. So whenever I go somewhere, I just say, listen, like, please don't put me in that room. You have 30 other locums here. Like, I'm sure there's somebody else that kind of wants to do that. And so I think a lot of times people just don't, they feel uncomfortable saying that they don't want to do certain things as a locums, right? And that's really like the site that you're at wants you to communicate with them. They don't want to place you in an uncomfortable or unsafe situation, right? So, my advice to people is just communicate. Like, nobody's going to bite your head off, right? Like, just tell them as a provider what you want. And that goes for MDs as well. I also help staff anesthesiologists. And, you know, there's an anesthesiologist that hasn't done peds in 10 years. So he says, please don't put me in those rooms. And, you know, there's no shame in just promoting, you know, patient safety.
Oh, absolutely not. And like, that's great that you do that, because if you're not comfortable doing the case, like, that's, no one benefits, right?
Right.
If you don't have experience or interest in that. You bring up the topic of like travel nurse being someone who is kind of gruff and maybe not well trained. And I think that was kind of true with locums too. And what we've seen is this transition to, I think, some of our best providers are locums, because there's a skill set, especially in surgery and anesthesiology, there's a skill set that's required to very quickly get into a site. You mentioned earlier the 30 seconds to make an impression with the patient, right? That first impression, that ability to meet a whole team of new people that you've never met before in a system that you're not familiar with, the flexibility required, the first impression that's required, the ability to be adaptive depending on what equipment's there, that's a special skill set. That's not just something that someone who's been doing the same thing for 30 years can be able to do. I think we're seeing more of a situation where those that are able to do locums, especially frequently, and especially being asked back to the same site where they're putting, they want to give you the good assignments. That speaks, I think, to the quality of locums providers that are around today.
Because I graduated in 2020 and I was, training at the height of COVID, I think there definitely is a shift in providers' mentalities of like, I'm not going to be a slave to the system. I'm not going to be a cog in the wheel. Right? Like, I have a life outside of medicine. I love medicine so much and I love taking care of my patients, but like, I have other passions. I want to start businesses. I have side hustles, right? I want to invest in real estate. I want to get to know about that. I want to spend time with my family and be at home with my kids, you know, that kind of thing. And so I think locums really, it's truly the best kept secret in medicine, because it really does allow you to do all those things. I hate to use this term, but like, gig economy, right? Like, that's the economy we live in, is just, I want to work on my terms. And with locums, you're not actually working less ever, because it's so lucrative and you fall in love with it so much that you actually end up working more, but it's your decision. You know, you want to work 80 hours one week and be off the next week. That's your choice. And I think, you know, people are craving that flexibility.
I'm curious to know where you see the locums market going in the next 5 to 10 years.
So particularly with anesthesia, I think, and I don't know if this is my hope for the future and I'm a forever optimist, but I think at some point everybody's going to be their own independent contractor, whether that's 1099 or W-2, you know, I think just everybody representing themselves as a partner of a group, or, you know, however you want to structure that. But at the end of the day, I think people being accountable for themselves as providers and just coming in and paying a flat rate that you can control. I that's where I see it going, specifically for anesthesia, but also like urology and GI and all these other.
I love that answer, because that is such a hot take. I completely see what you're saying, but, you know, so many of my colleagues went from being independent to being employed in like the 20 teens, and they're just not happy. There are so many pitfalls to that. I think you're exactly right. That's what we're seeing, is this shift back to people wanting to have that independence and more of a gig economy. So, man, that'd be great. 5 years, 10 years.
Yes.
You heard it here first. Yeah.
Well, and I think if I could say, with like, just from observation, I think in with MD specifically, there just is this, and I don't know if you guys get this through residency, but there's this, you know, I have to go through the process. I have to put in my time, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I want to be at an academic place and earn, you know, or my tenure, and, you know, I want to be professor. All those things that I think in my mind is just a way to control people, right? Because you can do all those things independently. You could be a speaker at conventions, right? Like you could still pursue like academia without, you know, just being a victim to the system.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because we just got back from a conference in Colorado that was put on by an academic department. And a lot of the, like all the panelists are people in that role, right? They're working on assistant to become associate professor, to become full professor. And it is a way to kind of have people feel like they have to put their time in. Allie and I had this exact discussion. Some part of me like loves the academic side of things, right? I love documentaries and all these like these kind of depth of conversations and little nuances. And should I have done a fellowship? Should I have pursued an academic career? And she made the point you're making that all of these things that we enjoy doing, first of all, many of them wouldn't have been possible if you're spending all of your time devoted to trying to just kind of move up the academic ladder. But also then a lot of the things that come as a benefit of that, we're getting to do, right? We're still at this conference. Right. We're still participating in it. And, you know, we're still, you get to travel more. You get to experience a whole wider variety of healthcare than if you are in that kind of set path and course. Okay. So, we do something at the end called a fast five.
Oh boy.
And okay. Usually it's related to something that I find unique or interesting about, the person we're talking about. So, looking at your amazing backdrop back there, you are in of the greatest cities in the world, Chicago, yes. Illinois. So, Fast Five Chicago edition. Are you ready? All right. Deep dish or thin crust?
Oh, thin crust.
Favorite Chicago neighborhood?
River North.
Is that where you are right now?
Yeah, yeah. And it's such a, people are going to roll their eyes, but I just love it so much. It's a little city. It's a little suburb. You know, it's the best of both worlds, I think.
Is it different than Streeterville? Or is it like yes. Streeterville just north of River North?
Yeah, Streeterville is a lot closer to the lake. Yeah. Streeterville is just so much smaller. The property's values are just so much higher. It's really cold. Like in the winter, it's really cold. And it's a little isolated. So you kind of have to travel whenever you're going to any, you know, anything fun. River North is a lot River closer North. To the Chicago River. Yeah.
All right, number three, Cubs or White Sox?
Cubs. Duh.
Well, you're in River North, not the South Side, I guess. So, yeah. All right, lakefront stroll or downtown hustled?
Is it summer or winter? Lakefront stroll.
Definitely.
Man, what a great lakefront there. That's
so beautiful. Skyline.
All right, number five, winter snowstorm or summer festival?
Summer festival. Definitely. Lollapalooza.
Have you been to Lollapalooza?
Yes. I'm not a huge, I don't like big crowds, but I went and saw Dua Lipa a couple of years ago and it was, it's a lot. There's a lot of people and they get really crammed up like trying to get close to her. But if you got to keep your distance, it's a good value.
Fabulous. Dr. Yusuf, thank you so much for your time. It was really a pleasure chatting with you and hearing all about nurse anesthesiology, locums, and some of your advocacy, as well as direct to locums. Can you tell us how our listeners can follow you, find you, web addresses, social media? We'll put it all in the show notes too.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. This was actually my first podcast. And
no way.
Yeah. And I am a huge podcaster. I listen to All In. I don't know if you listened to that. It was a great podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm primarily on Instagram. I'm kind of learning. I have a TikTok and a YouTube. I'm kind of learning how to use those platforms. And on Facebook, yeah. Thank you so much. This was
excellent.
Great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed chatting with you. All right, take
you
care.
You as well. Thank you. Bye.
You have been listening to Let's Locums, a podcast brought to you by SpecialtyLocums.com and hosted by Drs. Mark and Allison Royer. SpecialtyLocums.com is a physician-run locum tenens company. We're dedicated to providing the best locum tenens opportunities for our amazing healthcare providers. Join us every week as we dive deep into the world of locum tenens.